And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And now let's get right into our commentary. And our commentary this week is USGS research finds contaminants may play a role in California amphibian decline. Scientists have confirmed that agricultural contaminants may be an important factor in amphibian declines in California, according to an article recently accepted by the journal Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry. A study by scientists of the U.S. Geological Survey and the U.S. Department of Agriculture indicates that organophosphate pesticides from agricultural areas, which are transported to the Sierra Nevada on prevailing summer winds, may be affecting populations of amphibians that breed in mountain ponds and streams. Dramatic population declines in red-legged frogs, foothills yellow-legged frogs, mountain yellow-legged frogs, and Yosemite toads have occurred in California over the last 10 to 15 years, but no single cause for these declines has been positively identified. Scientists and managers have become increasingly concerned because many of these declines occurred in some of the state's most seemingly pristine areas. Declines have been particularly drastic in the Sierra Nevada, which lie east of the intensive agricultural San Joaquin Valley. The red-legged frog is listed as threatened under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, and the mountain yellow-legged frog and the Yosemite toad have been proposed for listing. While crucial to the agriculture industry, pesticides by their very nature can result in serious harm to wildlife, both by directly killing animals and through more subtle effects on reproduction development and behavior, said Dr. Donald Sparling, a research biologist and contaminant specialist with the USGS Patuxent Wildlife Research Center in Maryland. Unfortunately, there now appears to be a close correlation between declining populations of amphibians in the Sierra Nevada and exposure to agricultural pesticides. The scientists found proof that pesticides are being absorbed by frogs in both aquatic and terrestrial systems and are suppressing an enzyme called cholinesterase, which is essential for the proper functioning of the nervous system. Modern-day pesticides function by binding with this enzyme in animals and disrupting nervous system activity, usually causing death by respiratory failure. Decreased cholinesterase activity can indicate exposure to certain commonly used pesticides and can be harmful to animals. The scientists collected 170 tadpole and 117 adult Pacific tree frogs, a species that is still fairly abundant in the Sierra Nevada, from a total of 23 sites in six locations, including coastal, foothill, Lake Tahoe Basin, Yosemite, and Sequoia National Parks. Adult frogs were also collected from Lassen National Park. They found that cholinesterase activity levels in tadpoles are significantly lower in the mountains east of the San Joaquin Valley compared with similar sites farther north and east of the Sacramento Valley, where agricultural activity is less intense. Moreover, cholinesterase activity became decreasingly lower in tadpoles from both northern and southern sample sites as the sites moved in a gradient from the coast to the higher elevations. Thus, tadpole populations in the mountains had lower cholinesterase values than those along the coast. Similar but less significant trends were seen in adult frogs. The researchers also measured concentrations of particular pesticides in the bodies of tadpoles and adults. More than 50% of the adult frogs and tadpoles in Yosemite National Park had measurable levels of chlorpyrifos or diazinon, compared to only 9% at the coastal reference sites. Frogs in Yosemite National Park also had a higher frequency of detection for chlorpyrifos than those on the coast. Both diazinon and chlorpyrifos degrade very rapidly in organisms, and the detection of either compound indicates recent exposure to the chemicals. Of the pesticides tested in related lab studies, chlorpyrifos and diazinon, commonly used organophosphates, suppress nervous system activity, and along with endosulfan, a frequently used organochlorine pesticide, proved the most highly toxic to frogs. Diazinon has recently been targeted for a 3-year phase-out by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The presence of pesticides and the decrease in cholinesterase activity in Pacific tree frogs suggest that other species, which are more closely associated with water, could be even more affected, said Dr. Gary Fellers, a research biologist and amphibian specialist at the USGS Western Ecological Research Center in California. Mountain yellow-legged frogs, for example, spend 2 to 3 years as tadpoles before they metamorphose and then spend considerable time in the water as adults. Melting of pesticide-contaminated snow could provide a pulse of toxic chemicals at a critical time in the life history of these frogs. As the nation's largest water, earth, and biological science and civilian mapping agency, the USGS works in cooperation with more than 2,000 organizations across the country to provide reliable, impartial, and scientific information to research managers, planners, and other customers. This information is gathered in every state by USGS scientists to minimize the loss of life and property from natural disasters, contribute to the sound conservation, economic, and physical development of the nation's natural resources, and enhance the quality of life by monitoring water, biological, energy, and mineral resources. And that is our commentary for today. Unfortunately, maybe that's why Uncle Dennis is so weird. He's been known to eat some of that snow up there in the Sierra Nevada. Maybe that's a bad idea. But here's a good idea. In late November, the U.S. Forest Service announced a temporary halt to logging on 11 million acres of public forest in the Sierra Nevada. The suspension came in response to a lawsuit to protect the California spotted owl, the Pacific fisher, who's a relative of the mink, and other sensitive species. The suspension took effect a couple of days ago and is scheduled to last until March 1st or until a decision on the Sierra Nevada Framework Plan is announced. The framework will announce water quality, fire and fuel, sensitive species, non-native plants, and logging in the 11 national forests of the Sierra Nevada. Forestry officials expect they will finalize the framework in early 2001. The Forest Service contended that few of the projects suspended would have a negative impact on the species in question. However, the Forest Service has acknowledged that spotted owl populations have been declining. If you'd like more information, contact Craig Thomas of the Sierra Nevada Forest Protection Campaign. His number, 530-622-8718. That's Craig at 530-622-8718. And another victory. In response to an Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund lawsuit filed last July, the Forest Service has announced it is halting 34 logging projects in 7 national forests throughout the Southeast. Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Arkansas will be affected by the recent decision. Quote, when we brought this suit on behalf of Sierra Club and others, we were confident that sound science would prevail, said Eric Huber, attorney for Earth Justice. We are quite pleased that these sensitive areas of our national forests and the animals that live in them are now going to be off limits to clear-cutting and destructive logging. Filed in federal court, the July suit claimed that the logging practices, if allowed to continue despite prior court rulings preventing them, would cause severe harm to numerous forest species. The 11th Court of Appeals in Atlanta, Georgia, had already concluded that the Forest Service did not maintain adequate data about rare wildlife species that live in the Chattahoochee National Forest in Georgia, and this suit expanded that ruling to the 13-state southern region. Clear-cutting wipes out entire habitats for endangered animals. Road building and other logging activities further fragment habitat, cause soil erosion and other habitat degradation, and can destroy entire rare bird nesting grounds and endangered fish habitat, said Huber. The Forest Service is supposed to be in the business of conserving our national treasures, not selling them off to the top bidders, said Renee Voss, a Sierra Club director. This week's action will halt logging in 21 areas on Chattahoochee and Oconee National Forest in Georgia, 10 areas of the Cherokee National Forest in Tennessee, 5 areas in the Bienville, Homochito, and DeSoto National Forest in Mississippi, and 7 areas on the Wichita National Forest in Arkansas. The bottom line here is that critters such as wood warblers and various darters and other fish will now have a fighting chance to recover without a constant attack on their habitat, said Huber. And perhaps even more important, it could be that the Forest Service is starting to take notice that it cannot unilaterally opt to destroy precious habitat. Hopefully, the service will follow through and withdraw the other 22 timber sales they are still trying to defend in this suit. And up in Oregon, the Judy timber sale is back from the dead. Unfortunately, anybody out there remember the Judy timber sale? That's a salvage rider timber sale in the Hardesty Mountains roadless area? Yeah, I thought you would. Who could forget the Cottage Grove Ranger District building a logging road over what used to be a hiking trail 1402 in the heart of the roadless area? This from the agency, the U.S. Forest Service, that Jack Ward Thomas recently called, quote, the greatest conservation organization in the history of the world during his delusional Oak Ridge speech, a mere 10 miles from the road in question. In any case, Judy is history, right? Been canceled due to public opposition years ago. Wrong. Drive or bike up Forest Service Road 550 off of 5840 and check out the new roading that has been punched into Unit 8. Units 8 and 6 are still on the table, and the Cottage Grove Rangers are hoping to see them felled in the spring. When you check out the units, be sure to visit the big fire-scarred Dougies below the new roading and the fantastic ridgeline ecology just uphill from the spur road. Hardesty is super close to Eugene and pretty low elevation, so it makes for a great winter timber sale to visit. Of course, I'd be happy to head up with you anytime. Drop me a line. Yours, George, and that's George Sexton, and his email address, wafc@teleport.com. Thank you, George, for that information. And here's a little bit more bad news. The second wolf has been shot in Idaho within a month. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service law enforcement agencies have confirmed the death of another gray wolf in Camas County, Idaho. The alpha male of the Smoky Mountain Pack was recovered on December 4th. The dead wolf was found near Lick Creek, about 20 miles north of Fairfield. The wolf was last seen alive on November 22nd. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's forensics laboratory confirmed that the wolf died from a gunshot wound. The wolf is the second to have been shot in this area of Camas County. Another gray wolf was found dead on November 23rd, within 10 miles of where this wolf had been discovered. We have received several excellent leads and many calls regarding the death of the wolf, and we will aggressively pursue of the first wolf, and we will aggressively pursue our investigation of the death of the second as well, said U.S. Fish and Wildlife Special Agent Paul Wayland. If wolves continue to be injured or killed, Idaho will not reach its recovery goal, which means wolves will remain on an endangered species list for a longer time. There are troubling signs that these two wolf killings may point to a larger pattern. What the killers don't realize or don't care about is that they are undermining the hard work of ranchers, conservationists, and others on gray wolf recovery, pushing off further any chance of removing the strict protections for wolves under the Endangered Species Act, according to Suzanne Laverty of Defenders of Wildlife. Wolves, ranchers, local communities, in fact, everybody loses if these illegal killings don't stop. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has offered a $2,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for the killing of the wolf, and the Defenders of Wildlife has contributed another $2,000 toward the reward. Unfortunately, there was no contact information in this news story. I guess you need to contact the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Special Agent Paul Wyland somewhere in Idaho. And if you let them know who did it, you'll get $4,000 if they get convicted. Sounds like a good deal to Uncle Dennis. Moving on in animal habitat and other news, Kenya has said that it will suspend trawler fishing along its Indian Ocean coast and amid concerns about overfishing. A statement from the Kenyan Minister for Rural Development, Hussein Malam Mohammed, said the decision was made in the light of growing concerns about unsustainable exploitation of marine resources and reduced catches for local fishermen. Trawler companies previously had been allowed to operate outside 5 nautical miles from the Kenyan coast. Now they will not be permitted to fish anywhere within Kenyan territorial waters, a 12-mile zone under international law. Some trawlers had encroached within the 5-mile zone, damaging the equipment of small-scale fishermen and contributing to the virtual extinction of some marine species, the statement said. Calls for a ban on trawler fishing have gained momentum since the last European Union meeting last week decided to lift a 2-year ban on imports of Kenyan fish after a health scare. Local fishermen say they should be given a fair chance to take advantage of the European market. And stoking the fires of the Midwest's most contentious environmental issue, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Army Corps of Engineers agreed that the flow of water on the Missouri River should be increased in the spring to save fish and birds from extinction. General Carl Strock became the first Corps official to publicly endorse a, quote, spring rise in the river to protect the pallid sturgeon, piping plovers, and least terns from extinction, though he said any changes in river flow would not be fully implemented until 2003. But Senator Christopher Bond, a Republican from Missouri, an ally of farmers and barge owners who would be hurt by the spring rise, said he would lobby Texas Governor George Bush to reverse the decision when he becomes president, which unfortunately is turning out to be true. And from Southern California, we read, responding to a court order, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, how come they always have to respond to court orders, huh? Can't they just do their job? That's what we pay them to do. Is proposing to designate about 55,000 acres in two California counties as critical habitat for the endangered San Bernardino kangaroo rat. The proposed critical habitat includes a mix of federal, tribal, state, county, and private lands. The San Bernardino kangaroo rat, which was listed as endangered in 1998, occurs in about six scattered, isolated patches of alluvial sage scrub habitat throughout San Bernardino and Riverside counties in California. The species is threatened by continued habitat loss, degradation and fragmentation due to sand and gravel mining operations, flood control projects, and urban sprawl. Three of the largest blocks of remaining habitat for these species are mined for sand and gravel, and mining activities in this area is expected to increase. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been working with landowners, flood control districts, and federal and state agencies on habitat conservation for the kangaroo rat. Oh, boy. If you want more information, try the following webpage. https://carlsbad.fws.gov. That's carlsbad.fws.gov. And if you'd like to make a comment on the proposed critical habitat designation, you can do so until February 6th. Go to the webpage, and they'll tell you how to make those comments. More than a quarter of the coral reefs are gone in a report issued December 12th, more than one quarter of the world's coral reefs have been lost to global warming, pollution, fishing activity, and other sources of stress, and 70% could be dead within 50 years, the U.S. government and an international conservation study group have said. A report from the Global Coral Reef Monitoring Network found that 27% of the world's coral reefs are gone and predicted that 70% would be gone in the next 50 years. It's shocking that two-thirds of the world's reefs may be dying and that 30% of the world's reefs are already gone, Commerce Secretary Norman Mineta told a news conference. In Florida, some reefs have lost over 95% of their coral since 1975, Mineta said. Even under ideal conditions, it would take more than a human lifetime for these reefs to recover. Mineta announced four U.S. initiatives aimed at countering the crisis, including the first internationally recognized no-anchoring zones for large ships, the first of which will be in the Flower Garden Banks National Marine Sanctuary off Houston in the Gulf of Mexico. The initiatives also included a plan to set up a reserve in the Tortugas region off Florida's Key West, an agreement between the United States and Australia to study coral reef bleaching and the effects of global warming on reefs, and a plan to map 10% of U.S. reefs. We cannot continue to count on coral reefs to support billions of dollars in recreation and tourism while at the same time allowing them to be devastated by pollution, coastal development, and fishing, said Mineta, whose agency oversees the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. In his report, Clive Wilkinson, coordinator of the Global Coral Reef Monitoring Network, found that in 1998 alone, bleaching destroyed about 16% of the world's reefs, and in some parts of the Western Pacific, 90% of the shallow water corals had died. And from the United Kingdom, well, maybe it's the partially United Kingdom, just a couple of weeks after being splashed across tabloid newspapers wringing a bird's neck during a hunt, Queen Elizabeth II has announced a government bill which could lead to a complete ban on all forms of hunting with dogs in the United Kingdom. The bill will give members of Parliament a free vote, a vote free of party constraints on three options: self-regulation, statutory regulation, or a complete ban on all forms of hunting with dogs. The members of Parliament are expected to vote for the third option. It is a truly historic opportunity for Parliament to finally end this cruel and barbaric practice, which has no place in modern society, said Mike Baker, UK Country Director of International Fund for Animal Welfare. With claims of strong public support, the pro-hunting lobby can count a determined backing for what it claims is a civil liberty and part of the fabric of Britain's rural life. There are 194 registered packs of foxhounds in the UK, followed by more than 50,000 riders riders and over 110,000-foot or car followers. Immediately after the Queen's speech, the pro-hunting group Countryside Alliance called the ban option of the bill illiberal, illogical, and legally unworkable and unenforceable. The group will announce it will march on London March 18th of next year and promises the largest ever UK civil liberties demonstration. In March of 1998, with a rallying cry of "Listen to us," the Countryside Alliance mobilized 120,000 people to demonstrate in London's Hyde Park. If you'd like more information on the British hunting debate, visit the following webpage, www.banhunting.com. That's www.banhunting.com. And if you'd like the Countryside Alliance, that's the Pro Hunting Alliance, go to www.bfss.org. The Toronto National Post reports that in Canada, illegal logging is a serious problem that occurs close to home. The article, "Illegal Logging Hits BC Forest," reports that organized gangs of thieves are doing irreparable harm to old-growth forests as they raise millions of dollars worth of valuable trees, particularly red cedar. The thieves use lookouts, police scanners, forged permits, helicopters, and even portable mills, supplying a black market that trades in approximately $100 million worth of illegal timber annually. And after 8 years of often contentious negotiation among environmentalists, Native Americans, and representatives of the mining and logging industries, British Columbia has approved a plan to preserve 5 million more acres of land. The area in northern British Columbia connects with the 11-million-acre Musqua-Kachika Preserve and is an important part of a huge wildlife corridor stretching from Yellowstone in the United States to the Yukon of Canada that environmentalists are trying to protect. Mining and logging will be regulated in parts of the new preserve, while sensitive habitat will be protected from such activities. The preserve has the greatest number of large mammals in North America, including grizzly bears, wolves, moose, and bison. To date, the 106th Congress of the United States has approved 7 wilderness bills, adding approximately 309,000 acres of public land in the National Wilderness Preservation System. That brings the total acreage to 106,800,000 acres. Congress has yet to complete all its work for the year and is scheduled to be, well, it's already in its lame duck session. Included in this Congress's wilderness bills are the Black Ridge Canyons Wilderness, designated 75,000 acres outside of Grand Junction, Colorado, as the Black Ridge Canyons Wilderness Area, and an adjacent 122,000-acre Colorado Canyons National Conservation Area. The region includes innumerable spires, pinnacles, and the second highest concentration of natural rock arches in the Southwest. In Alabama, the Duggar Mountain Wilderness, designated 9,000 acres of the Talladega National Forest in Alabama as the Duggar Mountain Wilderness Area. Second highest peak in Alabama is located 70 miles east of Birmingham. Conservationists have worked tirelessly for nearly a decade to see Duggar Mountain permanently protected. The Gunnison Gorge Wilderness and expansion of the Black Canyon of the Gunnison Wilderness, it gained 4,400 acres and designated a 17,700 acre for a total of 22,000 acres additional. The Otay Mountain Wilderness, I believe that is in Southern California. The measure designated 18,500 acres of land in Southern California for the Otay Mountain Wilderness area, home of the Tecate cypress and more than a dozen more sensitive species. The Steens Mountain Wilderness in Oregon and the Virginia Wilderness in the George Washington National Forest of Virginia were the other two. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzief@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their 20th anniversary issue is now available. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And the first issue is free. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC. Listen to the streaming audio. There's lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime. And if you want to listen at other times, you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. And the software you need to play those files is free on the web. website, Earth First Radio is carried on a growing or shrinking number, if you look at it. Free speech and non-commercial radio stations. We've lost a few pirate stations here in the last few months. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. It's easy and free. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Stefan. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank Stefan for his great help over the last 3 months. Unfortunately, his internship is over, and we thank him for all his help. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to a little bit of Robert Hoyt off his Dumpster Diving Across America CD. This one, of course, is called Quitting Time.
About new inventions, I'm sure most were made with the best of intentions. Thought it was cool to put a man on the moon, but now I've begun to sing a different tune. Technology and science have become a religion, based on blind faith, not conscious decision. When answers cause the problems, it's time to stop and think. Slam on the brakes and make a U-turn from the brink. It's quitting time, it's quitting time, it's quitting time on that high-tech plantation. It's quitting time, it's quitting time on that old high-tech plantation. It's quitting time for good. They try to tell us how hard it used to be, back when things tended towards simplicity. But our way of life, based on false pretenses, cause look at all the unintended consequences. It's quitting time, it's quitting time, it's quitting time on that high-tech plantation. It's quitting time, it's quitting time on that old high-tech plantation. It's quitting time for good. Up by lies, but some of us have come see things through different eyes. Tomorrow there'll be more of us than there are today. We're that ragged, jagged, cutting edge, and we all say it's quitting time, it's quitting time, it's quitting time on that high-tech plantation. It's quitting time, it's quitting time.